sure he wishes he were here. I'm sure his thoughts are with us this morning. Most of you know me. I'm Gary. And I was ordained by Kurt in 2007 as a show in this lineage. And as last year as a sensei or teacher in this lineage. In full disclosure, I have not yet received full Dharma transmission. I was asked by our senior teacher, Jaru, to give today's Dharma talk. One last thing is I use the term Dharma talk. It's my feeling that Roshi gives a Teisho, senior students give Dharma talks. So, today's Dharma talk will be on case number 28 in the Iron Flute Collection, Lungya's Ultimate Stage. A monk asked Lungya, what did old masters attain when they entered the ultimate stage? They were like burglars sneaking into a vacant house, came the reply. Nyogen's comment, this monk probably thought masters have something others do not have, whereas they have nothing others have. Lungya's answer may seem awkward, but it was the way to handle this monk. He worked hard at one koan after another, striving to become a master, and asked about the ultimate koan, as he might about a final examination. He was impatient instead of walking step by step. He could not even dream of the ultimate stage with his disturbed mind, but greedily grabbed anything he came across, so Lungya put him in a vacant house. A healthy person never thinks of sickness, and a sick person struggles to attain health. A man was once asked what he had in him that he looked so calm and contented. In turn, he asked the questioner what he had in him that he looked so uneasy and disheartened. One who has nothing in him is always happy, but someone with many desires never gets out of his misery. Again, Rose verse. He walked the blade of a sword. He stepped on the ice of a frozen river. He entered the vacant house. His desire to steal ceased forever. He returned to his own home, saw the beautiful rays of the morning sun, and watched the moon and stars intimately. He walked the streets with ease, enjoying the gentle breeze. At last, he opened his treasure house. Until that moment, he never dreamed. He had owned those treasures from the very beginning. First, let me say what an absolute joy it is sitting with all of you. Most people in this room I've been sitting with for quite some time. This morning was just a beautiful, solid, quiet morning of sitting. We all got up early, we came here, we sat on our cushions, straightened our backs, breathed through the hara, watching our breath go out and out, out. Breathing, watching the breath. Someone asked me once, why do you have a meditation group? You're sitting on a cushion in silence. You could just do that by yourself. My answer is always, Sangha is kind of like your running buddies. If you're out, I'm going to go out and do some running. Or if you go out in the park by yourself, you're running for a while, you see a bench and you think, oh, I deserve a break. I'm running. You sit down on the bench. You get up and maybe you'll run to the next bench and have another seat. But if you get up in the morning and go out with a couple of other buddies, and you're all going to run, no one wants to be the one to say they need a break. The Sangha is like that. We all sit here. We know we're not going to move until the bell. On our own, after 10 or 15 minutes, you might think, oh, that's enough. I've done it. That's a wonderful sit. I'll stop now. All together like this, we sit longer, we sit deeper. What is it we're doing? What is it that we're doing? I know this question used to come up quite a bit when I first started practicing. What am I doing? You know, you sit and you say, oh, being at retreats. Oh, my daughter's home from college. What am I doing here? I don't get to see her but a few times out of the year. And everybody has these concerns. You know, what am I doing? I have a paper that's due. What am I doing? I have a test to study for. And the big one, on a day like today, what am I doing? It's so beautiful outside. Shouldn't I be living? Shouldn't I be in life instead of sitting in this dark room? What are we doing? My practice is at a point where I get out of bed every morning and sit for an hour. Although, that's not the first thing I do. The first thing I do is go to the bathroom. Can't go right from bed to the cushion without going to the bathroom. I would not recommend that. It's not a good idea. And so many times, I'll be in the bathroom, drag myself out of bed, and in the bathroom I'll be thinking, I could just go back to bed. I sit every day. I can go back to bed today. It just feels, I'm just tired. But I don't. And you know, when I go back into my room, do my bows and get on the cushion. When I get on the cushion, I am always happy I did not go back to bed. Always glad I went on, I got on that cushion. And that hour I spend on the cushion, you know, many of you have a daily meditation practice, and many of you also do a sesshin practice. And you know that your daily meditation practice rarely takes you to the same depth that a sesshin practice does. But we do this because it somehow informs the rest of our day. Something about that hour that we spend watching our breaths, or just trying to watch the breath. Sometimes if we have a busy day, so much is going on in our heads. Now we have this dentist appointment, the tooth is hurting, why isn't it? All these things go on in your head. I often say the worst case scenario with a daily meditation practice is if you don't achieve deep samadhi that morning, you at least spend an hour getting your day organized in your head. Sometimes that helps quite a bit. But always in some way, that hour informs how you spend your day. It colors your approach to the day. I've made the distinction, you know, some people, I think it's a mistake to live your life for the purpose of doing zazen. I mean, I don't think we're supposed to live to do zazen. I think we're supposed to do zazen so that we can live. Today's a beautiful day outside, and we've decided that we're going to do this practice with Sangha in this room. And we're going to miss several hours of a beautiful spring day. But when we walk out of here, we will see that spring day in a way that perhaps many other people will never see it. You know, there are people out there right now, out in the sunshine, out in the beautiful fresh air, but their minds are not focused, their heart is not gathered together, and they're not enjoying it for being in it. We almost enjoy it more for being here. So what are we doing? Zen practice, I don't really have to tell anyone this, but Zen practice is not like any other sort of practice. You know, practicing a musical instrument, or practicing medicine, or practicing law. You know, we don't really... Well, I suppose we get better at sitting still. We get better at dealing with pain in our knees. We get better at the physical aspect of sitting. But we're not really gaining anything. You know, I think it's the Tao Te Ching You'll always have to excuse my lack of scholarship. I consider it a proud Rinzai trait. But there's a saying somewhere that, in most realms of study, something is added, something is learned every day. In this realm of study, something is let go every day. Something is forgotten every day. This is, in a sense, what we try to do. We try to let go of our small self. Try to let go of those aches and pains. There's a form of Buddhism, which is, again, my poor scholarship, Amitabha type of Buddhism, which practice consists solely of reciting the names of Buddha. It's just, there's no sitting meditation, no ceremony. It's a practice of a mental recitation of the names of Buddha. And some other people look at this and say, wow, they've got it made. They don't have to sit. They don't have to do all this pain. What can they possibly be getting out of that? They're just reciting the names. What is that? What sort of practice? But you look at it a little deeper, it's a practice of great faith. The three pillars of Zen, as it's been called through these decades, are great doubt, great faith, and great tenacity. A great doubt that things are as they seem, a great faith in the process of that we are engaged in, of trying to wake up, and of course the tenacity to stick with it. A great faith, there's a great faith involved in saying, I will just chant the name. I will just chant the name of the Buddha. Because there's some part of you that says, there must be more. There must be something more I should be doing. So what do? We sit, watch the breath, straighten the spine. We fall prey to the same sort of doubt. We all think, maybe I should be doing something more. What should we be doing? What should we be doing? What sort of enlightenment am I going to have? What's it going to be? It's so easy when you sit. Your mind starts to wander. You have things you have to do. You start thinking of that. You start to wander. You start thinking of, when you were a child and your brother was such a master. You start thinking of so many things. But, a lot of times we think of, we think of very positive things. We think of our enlightenment. We think of things we've read in the sutras or in the koan collection. And these can be just as distracting to a practice, Because wanting to be somewhere else is always just wanting to be somewhere else. Whether it's wanting to be, outside in the sunshine, or whether it's wanting to be, fully enlightened and have a perfect realization of our fundamental nature. Either way, it's still not being where we are now, in this moment. It can be a problem. You can start to imagine what enlightenment would feel like, or what realization would do for you, and how it would manifest itself. And that starts to become a barrier in itself. Because, sometimes you could run the risk of coming face to face with enlightenment and turning away because it's not the way you pictured it. You've thought, no, this can't be. Many people here do koan practice, and sometimes you'll be sitting and you'll have something that, that can't be what this koan is about. No, I must look somewhere else. And you go into Dokusan, and Roshi says, "Well, what's wrong with that? That's a fine answer." And we almost turn away from it because we have developed this picture of what it's going to be like. One of the people that practices with us came up to me some months ago he was telling me that, you know, they'd been involved in a lot of different meditation practices and different, you know, different traditions. And many of them, those traditions, had what you might call like peak experiences or moments of you know, real empowerment or something you could really feel and sink your teeth into. And they wanted to know, is, you know, is anything cool like that going to happen here in Zen? And I had to tell them, well, you know, Zen is always, always, always about being in the moment. Just this moment. And if there were such a thing as a really cool thing that was going to happen, and I told you what it was, you would never be in the moment. You'd always be looking for it. And how do I put this? There aren't any cool things unless you count, you know, all of this wonderful universe we find ourselves in. It's always about this moment, this moment. You know, there's another koan story that reminds me of this point. A monk is sitting doing meditation. The master comes in and says, well, what are you doing? The monk very wisely says, I'm becoming a Buddha. The master sits down next to him, picks up a tile, and starts rubbing it with a cloth. So the monk says, what are you doing? The master says, I'm making a mirror. Monk says, you can't make a tile into a mirror just by polishing it. And the master says, well, you can't become a Buddha just by sitting. And when I first read this koan, it's a very disappointing koan. You know? Well, what are we doing? What are we doing here? We all think we want to wake up. We want to become a Buddha. What does he mean by this? You can't become a Buddha by sitting. Very disappointing. But you know, it's not a matter of becoming. I may have said this once before, but years ago I had a Dokusan with a sensei up at the Zen Mountain Monastery. This was early in my practice, and I was having a hard time making it through Sesshin. I would get very nervous and very paranoid. And I went into this Dokusan and said, I'm having so much trouble. I've been so used to having this centered person all this time. And now I feel like it's being destroyed by this practice. You know, that I'm going to turn into this other thing. And he said, you know, it's not about turning yourself into something other than what you are. It's realizing what you are already. So in this sense, in this koan, to say you can't become a Buddha by sitting is really pointing to the fact that you can't become what you already are. We are all of us. And I'm saying this with my mouth, just like we would all just say it with our mouth. We are all of us Buddha. We are all of us perfect awareness. We've been born into this human life to be given the opportunity to realize the fullness of this human life. So what do? We sit, straighten the spine, watch the breath, and try to stay in the moment. That's all there is the moment. Every thought about the future, every thought about the past, is only a thought. You know, in recent years, there have been several physicists who have come to the conclusion that there is no such thing as time. That time doesn't exist the way, you know, oxygen or granite exists. That time is entirely a conceptual artifice. Even Stephen Hawking, when asked about time travel, he said, well, it was impossible, in his opinion. And rather than give an explanation that you might expect of the world's most renowned physicist, his explanation was, no one has ever visited us from the future. So if there was a future in which time travel was going to be discovered, somebody would have come back by now and told us all about it. So we only have the moment. Sometimes, focusing on the moment seems like we're somehow limiting ourselves. We should be doing other things. We should be planning big plans or atoning for past sins. We should be doing something. All of that is, in a way, very artificial. Only the moment. And to focus on the moment, to stay in the moment, deeper and deeper. To say something grand like, oh, that's the path to liberation, or it's the path to enlightenment. It's the path to enjoying your life as it is. As it is. There's a saying, one should enter a zendo with nothing and leave with less. We come to the zendo, we leave our shoes out in the hall, maybe we take out our wallet, leave our keys outside, take off our jewelry, no fancy clothes, just some very little. Enter with nothing. We sit, straighten our backs, breathe, watch our breath, all move, go on. Whatever our practice is at that moment, staying in the moment. And slowly we can drop things away. We can drop a little of our stress, leave a little of our anxiety. We can leave little bits of our cultural identities. We can leave grad student behind. We can leave husband, wife. We can leave mailman behind. Just let it drop off. And I suppose eventually, leave male or female behind. We can leave human or non-human behind. We leave things in the zendo. We let them drop away. So this is what we're doing. But it's not doing. The t-shirt. Think, not thinking. I recall a young man who came to, I guess it was a Wednesday, it was a while ago, it might have been a Thursday, but he came to a sit, and I believe he was undergrad. He was very curious, very intellectual. Took this opportunity to learn about Zen. And Kurt, as he has with all of us, sat him down, showed him the posture, breathing, count the breath, and told him, as you practice this, as you continue this practice, little by little your mind will become focused. The barrier between you and the world will become a little more porous, a little less solid. And this guy he got it. He's like, yeah, I get it. No, I get it. I understand. Yeah, sure. We're all one. I get it. You're very, very intellectual. You got it. Oh, yeah. No, I understand. Yep, I get it. Never saw him again. It's not about getting it. It's about doing it. Stephen Batchelor's great quote, Buddhism isn't a set of things to believe, it's a set of things to do. We need to do our practice. We need Sangha. We need Dharma. We need Buddha. We take refuge in these. So what are we doing? Well, in this koan today, what are we doing? Are we sneaking into a vacant house? I'm not sure. Is your house vacant? Someone asked me once when I was giving a basic instruction. A woman said to me, well, if I sit like this, will I have greater peace or less anxiety or... I forget how she phrased it, but she had several questions. And I said, you know, I'm not really trying to be a wise guy about this, but honestly, the only answer I have for you is, you tell me. You tell me. I can't say to you, if you do this practice, this will happen or that will happen. Do the practice. Be in the moment. Let the moment happen to you. This is what we can do. Right now I'm taking a mental inventory of all the things I wanted to bring up. I may have brought them all up. There's one thing I want to say. I have a confession to make. I used a rather cheap essayist's trick a moment ago. You know, if you read an essay and somebody says, you know, many people say that such and such and such and such. Usually that such and such and such and such is the writer's opinion, which he prefaced by many people say to give it some weight. I have to confess. The saying about entering a zendo and leaving with nothing, I made that. But I like it. I think it's really good. So I wanted to make it sound like it somehow had existed before. But I certainly can't do it with this group. And nor should I. So what are we doing? We sit, we breathe, we let the minutes pass, let the hours fall away. So hopefully someday we will sneak into the empty house. You know, just like this young man who had it all together. You know, he understood. You know, so many of these koans are great traps. Great traps, and this one is no exception. You know, what's so easy, this is such a beautiful little metaphor. Enlightenment is the empty house. Oh, okay, now I'm looking for an empty house. You know? But telling you the house is empty doesn't help. Telling you the house is not empty doesn't help. You know, it's not about us. It's not about the empty house. If anything, it's the sneaking. You need to sneak. I tell you the house is empty. You still must sneak in on your own. You know, there's no other way around it. We're going to burgle this house. We're going to go in there. We're going to sneak in. So, I hope you'll forgive me if I don't fill up all the time allotted. I just want to encourage all of us. Encourage all of us for showing up, for being here. Encourage us all. The practice that I know we all maintain, we all hold so dear. Hopefully, one by one, all at once, singly, together, in bunches and tiny groups and big sesshins. Maybe at some point we'll all sneak in. A monk asked Long Ya, what did old masters attain when they entered the ultimate stage? They were like burglars sneaking into a vacant house, came the reply. Genro's verse again. He walked the blade of a sword, stepped on the ice of a frozen river. He entered the vacant house. His desire to steal ceased forever. He returned to his own home, saw the beautiful rays of the morning sun, and watched the moon and stars intimately. He walked the streets with ease, enjoying the gentle breeze. At last, he opened his treasure house. Until that moment, he never dreamed he had owned those treasures from the very beginning. These treasures are ours.